Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 90-year-old Purple Heart recipient Zane Taylor of Orem, Utah. He's the author of the book Lesser Heroes, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. He told us about suffering frozen feet during the Battle of the Bulge. What about today? I mean, you're 90 years old. This is 70 years ago we're talking about. How much trouble do your feet give you even today?
There's not a day go by that I don't feel something. I have to wear certain socks and shoes.
Again, you say you hate to say it because you're not looking for sympathy, you're not complaining, but that's the reality. This is a burden you've been carrying for 70 years because of that war.
I'm very willing to carry it because of the way I felt about our country. I would have done anything for this country. And so when I went in, I knew if I ever got there, I'm fighting, and I'll take it, I'll die. I was not afraid of dying. It was how do you get dead, you know? Whether it was a wound or I saw some guys with some bad situations, you know.
And you say you would have done anything for your country, and while you're trying to recover from your injuries, and they gave you the Purple Heart for your frozen feet, right?
Yes. They didn't do it to all of the frozen feet. Some were a lot different than others. But when I got to Colorado, there were hundreds. I'm just glad to be home, be back.
But while you're recovering from your injuries, you find out that two of those guys in that picture on the cover of your book, the guys from your rifle squad, that they were killed in action?
Kerrigan and Sutherland. I know the story of this because Fred, this is my foxhole buddy, a little Chicago guy named Fred Pote. He was there when these two got killed. I think it was about 2 to 3 weeks after I left. Evidently, the Germans, they would take their artillery and shoot, and if there was a road up there, they'd drop the shells right on the road. They had the roads already zeroed in. And when our trucks came along, they hit right on the trucks. They could do the whole thing. Well, everybody jumped out but Fred and these two guys. Fred jumped out and he forgot his rifle under the bench on the side. And then these two guys jumped out and a shell that right by him. Well, it killed one instantly. Kerrigan was still alive. They drug him out into the field away from the road where the shells were landing. It took them a while before they could get an ambulance. He got in the ambulance with Kerrigan. And the ambulance driver came and says, "Are you hit?" "No." "Well, you got to get out of the ambulance." He says, "I'm not leaving, Kerrigan." The ambulance driver came in, tried to pull him out, and he pointed his rifle at him. He said, "I'm not leaving, Kerrigan, so just drive on." They went back in a tent. They had these tent hospitals all over. He was sitting by Kerrigan in this tent hospital, and he overheard the officers and doctors over there talking about Fred and said, "He's crazy. He came with this guy, and that guy's not going to make it." He heard him say that. He picked his rifle up and crawled under the tent and hitchhiked back to the front line. He's that kind of guy. Well, he wasn't going to leave until he knew he was gone.
It speaks volumes about the bonds that you had formed, which tells me that when you got that news that Sutherland and Kerrigan had been killed, that must have been really hard for you to process.
Really hard in the hospital to think two guys had survived that long, survived for 4 or 5 months now, and they couldn't go home. One was married and one wasn't married. I felt so bad for the one whose wife wouldn't have him home.
So you're in the hospital when Germany surrenders. What did that mean to you?
Yeah, that was a big thing because in the hospital we kept track. You know, we were all buddies, all had something wrong with us. Making friends, the trouble is a lot of those guys got better before I did. I had to go clear to August, from January to August before I was discharged. So you can see it was quite a while.
When it was all over, when Germany had surrendered, and eventually Japan surrenders too, and this nationwide effort that you said earlier, you talked about how this nation came together and that so many people played a role in that. How much satisfaction and pride did it give you personally to know that this enemy, who had done so many horrific things, had finally been defeated?
I thank my Father in heaven. I'm so grateful that guys didn't have to go out and walk and get shot at. And anyway, yes, I had some great feelings when the Germans surrendered and when the Japanese surrendered.
So when you're finally healed up, you go back to college, you go to Snow College, and it's a pretty unique way that you met someone that I don't think you can imagine your life without. Tell me that story. How did you guys meet?
That was really something, because I had this girlfriend when I left, not that close, that tight, but she wrote every 10 days while I was gone, which means a lot. I received more letters than anybody in the Army total. I had relatives and friends we'd write. Anyway, when I got home, she'd got 2 years ahead of me because I was almost in a year and a half. So she'd graduated from Snow College. She'd gone to University of Utah. Well, it's hard dating between Ephraim and University of Utah.
Yeah, that's what, probably 3-4 hours apart?
Yeah. And so when we became king and queen of Founders Day.
Wait. King and Queen. Tell me the story. How did you become King and Queen of Founders Day? This is a holiday they celebrate every year at that college, which is still there, Snow College.
They always voted on a King and Queen, the student body, and we all voted. And she lived in a dormitory. I lived in my home, father and mother's home. And I didn't know this young lady until I come out of the gym where I'd been exercising. And that's when that guy grabbed me by the arm and said, "You better go up to the second floor where they post the information on the blackboard." He said, "No, I'm not going. I want to go home." He grabbed me by the arm and says, "I think you better go up there." Went up the stairs, and there was my name and her name on the blackboard. Well, I didn't know her. I asked somebody the next morning, and they said, "Well, we're going to meet Thursday afternoon in the gym, and she'll be there." We met in the gym, and that's the first I ever remember seeing her. I went home that night, and I told my mom, I said, "Mom, I saw the prettiest girl you could ever meet." But the king had to go pick up the queen at the dormitory with the big dress on and suit and take her to the dance. And guess who was sitting in the back of the hall on a seat? A girl from Salt Lake.
Uh-oh.
I was running from my girl down there to this, because I had to take care of this young lady. And a lot of people don't know that we used to sign cards. They had them numbered 1 through 15, and then
the dance card. Now it's just an expression, but it has its basis in reality. There was a dance card.
Yeah, a dance card. Well, I'd run down and dance with my girlfriend, and then I'd have to come back and take care of her.
You were two-timing that night. You were dancing with two different girls, but she still decided to marry you.
We didn't date for a little while, I'm sure, but when we did, it got more interesting. And I just thought so much of her. My girlfriend had come down from Salt Lake on the bus. She came out to my house and said, "I think we're through." And she married my best friend. My friend got home from the war. They married each other, and I couldn't have been happier than my best boyfriend married a really great girlfriend.
And you got to marry the one you wanted to marry. And how long you guys been married now?
68 years.
So I'm just thinking back, you know, all the close calls you had in Europe, the frozen feet that maybe saved your life, all these other situations that could have claimed your life. If any of those are different, you never make it home, you never meet her. Your 7 kids, 31 grandkids, and 44 great-grandkids are never born. That's pretty hard to grasp right there.
That is really hard, because we just happened to have 7 kids. We lost one daughter with a tumor in her brain, but we have 6 left, and they're the happiest people with the greatest children you could ever imagine. And so we go every Sunday to one of the four that live in the valley. They have dinner for us every Sunday.
Well, and it was your wife who told you, you got to write this book. Why Lesser Heroes? What's the reasoning behind that title?
I wanted to be sure the story was told about all the people in the United States. Even the farmers were working. The shipyards had a lot of women welding, making airplanes and tanks and guns. And I felt like it was a team that won the war. I felt like it was a team that won the war. We had 16 million men from the United States in all of, and there were, how many would you guess were wounded in the Pacific and the European War? There were 650,000 wounded. How many do you think were killed? 400,000 killed. And I found out since reading that there were probably more. Because I speak, we try to speak every other month.
And when you do that, when you go around and speak, and you tell this story of not just what you did, but what you saw and what America was 70 years ago, why do you do it? What is the message that you're hoping to convey?
Well, I realize I only touch a teeny tiny fraction of the people, but anybody that's over 12, say 14 years old, they start to get the message when they're 14 or 15, and I've gone to schools. But I feel that this country is so special. We have the freedoms we do. I'm a registered gun owner. If I want a packet, I want a packet. I don't mind give up any freedom. I want these representatives that are in Washington to do what's right for the people and not worry so much about getting their job back every 4 years or 2 years.
You mentioned Washington and our fine representatives there. Speaking of Washington, have you had the opportunity to go back there since they built the World War II Memorial?
I just went back in August, and it was the most wonderful trip.
Was this with Utah Honor Flight?
On the Honor Flight. I've never been treated so royally. They had a wheelchair for all 50 of us. Back in the airports here and back east, people in the airport just stopped what they were doing. We kept wheeling down, and then they took us to all the main memorials, New World War II, the Vietnam, the Korean War memorials, and treat us like kings and queens. Yeah. I'm so grateful for that. I'm sure that maybe the government is helping to finance that.
Not usually. I can tell you for the one we're involved in and nationwide, it's almost every penny is privately donated either by an individual or a corporation. And that's actually one of the misconceptions that most Honor Flight groups fight is that people assume the government's doing this. The government didn't build the memorial. That was $190 million from people like you, World War II veterans themselves. And the government's not paying for Honor Flight, which is so amazing that the public steps up and does this for you. And when you were there at the World War II Memorial, you mentioned the number, more than 400,000 of your contemporaries died. You could have added to that number easily. When you saw those gold stars that represent that there, what came to mind for you?
I had to shed some tears. I couldn't stop there. And some young people from schools all over the country would come up to me because we had these hats on and coats. And it was fun to tell them a little bit about it. Because they were, boy, you'd start telling two school kids, pretty soon you're surrounded. Yeah, it was very emotional for me. I just so happy I was able to do that.
Well, I think the upshot of all of that is there were a lot of people that felt it was important to say to you, thank you for serving our country. So I echo those sentiments. I thank you for sharing this story with us and in your book, Lesser Heroes, and in the book that's still coming so we can find out how many toes you got. Is there anything else that you think we all need to know?
I'd just like to thank you for going after veterans. There aren't many people who could or would do that. So I want you to feel like what you're doing is very important to me. Have a lot of veterans.
Well, the privilege is all mine, sir. Zane Taylor of Orem, Utah. I have a link to his book, Lesser Heroes, up for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And I hope you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.